This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, we are here. The season is fast approaching. Why? Because training camp is underway here at St. John Fisher University. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, as always, on One Bills Live, as our coverage begins from St. John Fisher. Practice number one in the books. And Steve and I will talk about it here in just a second. Want to give you a rundown of ceremonies here this afternoon. First and foremost, in about 10 minutes' time, we're going to have one Terrell Bernard joining us here on the set after practice numero uno. Get his thoughts on that, among a host of other things concerning the team, the roster, and the performance of a defense that's expected to raise expectations this season. After that, we will have Brandon Bean's press conference here on day one of training camp. We will bring that to you right after we're done with Terrell Bernard. And expected to address the media after practice today, one Josh Allen and one Joey Bosa, who was a full participant at practice on the field today. And we will have those press conferences for you as well. So we are jam-packed, 3 hours, soup to nuts. We've got you covered here at Bills training camp. And Steve, I am going to give you what I believe should be the headline of practice number one.
Oh, okay.
Are you ready? Christian Benford was the best player on the field today, and it was not close.
Yeah.
He stood dominant.
Out. He stood out. He was dominant. He played extremely well. Blanketed everybody he faced. He looks like the guy that
got paid.
Got paid. Yeah, he looks like he got,
dominant.
He looks like the guy that deserved to get paid, whether he got paid or not.
I don't think he gave up a reception today.
Yeah.
And it was all red zone, as is usually the case. Coach McDermott doesn't like receivers and DBs running long routes on right. the first day of camp. They like to ease them in. So the team sessions, both 7-on-7 and 11-on-11, were in the red zone, as has been the case for the last several years. I don't think Benford gave up a reception today. And he was targeted like half a dozen times.
Yeah, and it was a fun practice to watch. Nice to get things going. They're in helmets only, which changes things a little bit, but usually changes it in favor of the offense. But today, you're right. There were some guys that showed up, and it really looked good. Now the guy, it's hard to get any kind of read on the big guys down inside on either side of the ball.
But yeah, because they're not in pads. Yeah, yet.
All you can get is like rotations, patterns, and that kind of stuff. And but it was good. It's good practice, and I think they came out relatively unscathed. I didn't see anybody get carted off or have to walk off. But obviously, there's a short list of guys who didn't practice anyway.
Yeah. So that list. As we know, yesterday, Dawson Knox got put on the non-football injury list. It's a hamstring injury. We found that out from Coach McDermott this morning. And then the non-participants who are currently on active PUP, Spencer Brown, Cedric Van Pran Granger, two offensive linemen. Brown has a back injury. Van Pran Granger has a calf injury. So they are on active PUP. They still count towards a roster spot. But as soon as they can pass a physical, they will be back on the practice field. One addition to the non-participant list was Laviska Shenault. He is out with a lower leg strain, did not practice today. Landon Jackson, who came off active PUP yesterday and is ready for camp, did very little in the practice setting today, did not get any team reps, did individual position right. drills, but no teamwork for Landon Jackson, so presumably they want to ease him back in. They just right. got him off PUP. They don't want him to go back on an injured list. So Landon Jackson, no team reps from what I saw today.
Deion Walker, the big defensive lineman draft pick, he was full go today.
As was
Joey Bosa.
Yep.
Back at it. So it's an ongoing conversation you have with the injury list, and there was some give and take today.
It was good news, though, concerning Deion Walker. Deion Walker has the pars defect in his back, and they were managing his reps through the course of the spring. He went from 3 reps per team period up to 4, and then at minicamp, he was up to 5 reps per team period. So we asked Coach McDermott today, are there any restrictions? Are his reps being monitored in any way? And he said, no, he is off the rep management that he was on in the spring. That's a direct quote from Coach McDermott. So all signs pointing to Walker being full go. So cross your fingers that, he'll be fine
for the duration of camp and, more importantly, the preseason. Here's some other things I jotted down, Steve. We saw flashes today from number one draft pick Max Hairston. Now, Steve and I actually watched one play in particular where he did the right thing in the zone coverage. He was right in the right spot in the middle of the end zone, but he just didn't have his head on a swivel to react quickly enough to a pass that was thrown to Dalton Kincaid in his area, and he couldn't make a play on the ball. He was a half second late, even though he executed the play properly.
A little bit of a collision. It's just the big body of Kincaid, you know, was there before he was. He saw it. He just saw it literally 0.2 of a second too late and missed a play on the ball, missed breaking it up at least. If not, if he'd seen it early and anticipated, he'd picked it off and gone the other way. But you could see a wheels turning.
Yes.
Yeah, it was there.
And he missed by inches on another sideline throw at the goal line to Curtis Samuel. He read the play perfectly, plant and drive, but it was a half second late there. And I would imagine that a lot of that timing will come the more and more reps that he gets. Let's not forget, he missed some reps in the spring because of a hamstring injury.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a little catch-up time here, but you're already seeing it click in his head. It's just not clicking probably as fast as it will a month from now. Maybe. But what did we see at the end of practice? There's a post route by Hamler that he ran while being covered by Hairston. He left Hairston in the dust on the cut inside. Hairston was three steps behind him.
Right.
And by the time the ball was arriving at KJ Hamler, he closed the three-step gap and broke up the pass.
Yeah.
That's catch-up speed at an elite level.
And even the one that you spoke about, the play on the sideline, it was they were on the goal line there on the four, and Hairston defended the pass at the two, so they didn't score on the play.
No, the guy went out at the one.
He went out at the one, so he did defend the play. It was a win for the defense, keeping him out of the end zone. And it took, and I'll say this, it took a razor's edge throw to complete the pass.
Yeah.
So,
like you could already see the progress coming with each rep that he took, and by the end of practice, there he is in the end zone breaking up the pass. And that was encouraging to see, and you could tell he felt good about it too. It's like, dang, I've been this close on about five or six passes. I finally got a PBU.
That'll happen off and on all throughout. What you really want to see is that kind of is consistency. You know, I mean, it's day one. Let's see him do it in day two, and day four, and day seven, and day 12. First preseason game. So, you know, you got to see it all the time, and you know, but they're off to a good start.
We also saw a rotation at the right tackle position. In the absence of Spencer Brown, we saw both Tylan Grable and Ryan Vandermark, the two backup tackles. I think we anticipated that. So they rotated through there in Spencer Brown's absence. So we'll see where that goes in the coming days, and hopefully Spencer Brown is back sooner rather than later. So that'll be something to keep an eye on here. And I think when we hear back with Spencer Brown, we get a little concerned because we know he's only 2 years removed from back surgery. Right. So anytime you hear back with him, you're like, oh, geez, okay. Whatever.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's – yeah, and they're going to monitor it. And this it's just because they hold the guy out doesn't mean it's serious or it's going to be chronic or anything like that, although he has, like, as you said, it's been a thing. And that's probably why they're being cautious.
Yeah.
They want to handle it to make sure he's healthy enough once they do start getting some game time.
All right, we're going to have Terrell Bernard do the Chris Collinsworth chair slide as he does on Monday Night Football. Good to see you, TB.
TB, how are you, man?
So Buffalo's defensive captain joining us here on One Bills Live, and first practice in the books. I know I passed you in the field house about a month ago, and I asked you about it because you were signing autographs on Media Day, and I was asking you about the number change. Like, I got to get used to that. Everybody else has got to get used to that. I know you were two in college. So is there something about a single digit that you just wanted to have? I know that's kind of the in vogue thing these days. You wanted to get a single digit or what?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, the single digit, like I said, I was number two in college, so I just always liked the single digit, but I'm also a huge Kobe Bryant fan.
Okay.
So that was part of it. Once I saw that eight was open, it was like...
Josh is a big Kobe guy too, isn't he?
Yeah. So I needed to...
All right. I like that.
Yep.
Yeah. give us a little synopsis of the day one. What were you expecting? What happened? And just give us a little summary of the day.
Yeah, it was a good day. You know, all red zone work. You know, we had some pass breakups. I think Christian Benford had a great day.
Oh, my God. Best guy on the field, I thought, today.
Yeah, I think he had four or five pass breakups. You know, we had a good day on defense. I feel like, you know, was able to knock the rust off a little bit. There's so much happening in the red zone. It happened so fast.
Yeah.
There's a lot of man stuff that we're trying to get done. And then also a lot of checks that, you know, we need to make based on situation, formation, that type of stuff. So to be able to do that, come out here on the first day and execute at a pretty high level, it was a good start.
Yeah. Christian, yourself, Greg Rousseau, you know, you guys all got new contracts. Well deserved, obviously, but what does that do? Do you let it enter your mindset at all? Like, hey, the team has shown they believe in me. They want me for the long-term future success of this franchise. I'm just wondering, how does that sit with you as you now take the field for the first time with what is going to amount to generational wealth for you, man? You know,
I appreciate it. Yeah, I think, you know, for me, my mindset towards it was that they wanted me here, and I expressed to them I wanted to be here, and we were able to get something done, and you know, I couldn't be more thankful.
Yeah.
You know, it's a long process and a lot of work that goes into it, and you know, for that to happen was, you know, a huge experience for me and my family. Like I said, man, I'm just thankful and grateful, and I want to show my appreciation by how I come out and represent the Bills every
day. Proving them right.
Exactly.
On the
field.
How
I go to work, how you know, how I interact with the teammates, and how, you know, like I said, they believed in me, and now I wanna give it back to them. So I'm excited. It's fun to come out here and go to work every day with these guys. So
from last year to this, when you guys break down into offensive team meeting and defensive team meetings, a lot of new faces in your room. How's that transition going?
It's been good. I feel like we got a lot of new guys up front, a lot of guys that we're getting on board and just getting with, you know, how we do things. So it's been fun. You know, like we say every year, it's a new team. It's a new season every single year. So to be able to meet these guys and hang out with them while we're here 24/7, you know, just understanding who we are, who they are, and, you know, building that relationship. So, you know, once you get to, you know, points in the season that are tough, you have the relationship to fall back on, and, you know, you can really, really build on that.
I know it's day one, and everything is subject to change in terms of, you know, position battles and things like that. Cole is rolling with you guys here at the start of camp. It's a new guy to communicate with on the back end. I know he played four games with you guys last year, but how do you make sure that when it's a new person, you know, the communication is on point? Because I guess there are some nuances to how guys communicate a little bit differently out there. So how do you make sure, as a defensive captain, we're all on the same page here with a new voice in the 11?
Yeah, I think the main thing is time on task. And, you know, that's a huge part of why we're here, why we do training camp, how we do it. The reps that we get together, the walkthroughs that we get together, just the amount of time that we spend together. You know, me, Cole, T-Rap, a bunch of guys, Matt, Greg, all of us were here throughout the summer. So working out together, getting on the field together when it's just us, talking through things, and building that, like I said earlier, building the relationship and the bond. That's what, you know, really, you know, elevates you to the next level. It's not just a surface level connection. It's a deeper connection than that. And I think that's what makes Buffalo, you know, special. And part of the reason why we've had success is because we really care about one another. And I'm going to do everything in my power to help Cole. And I know Cole is doing everything that he needs to do to be ready to, you know, help us when we need it. So it's that relationship, that bond, that time that really, you know, accelerates that process.
Yeah. What's different about Bobby Babich this year? Now, his second year, he's got a lap. Yeah. Now he's been around the block once, right? What's different about it?
I think just his confidence in himself. You know, he's always been a confident guy, but even today, I think, you know, you can just feel, you know, his confidence, his energy, his excitement. You know, sitting in his meeting last night where he's got the whole defense up and just rallying the guys and getting guys' mindsets in the right way, in the right place, to come out here and dominate. I think that's the key point that he's been doing. He's a great coach. He's a great person. I had him as my linebackers coach for a few years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, me and Bobby have a special relationship. I have him in my head every day.
Whether you want it or not.
His voice when he's not around. Yeah.
His voice is in my head 24/7. So, you know, I'm excited for him.
I'm curious about this because you're trying to get ready, obviously, for regular season football and anything that opposing offenses can throw at you. And Joe Brady, with all this day one, mm-hmm. there is pre-snap motion all over the place.
Yep.
All of that motion pre-snap, that's valuable for you guys, right? Because
for sure.
it forces you to communicate maybe even more than you would on maybe when you're facing a more static offense, for example.
Sure.
Like the Jets last year, Rodgers doesn't like motion. He doesn't do any motion. It's an easier day. All this motion, how much does that really kind of help you guys get schooled up and ready for week one?
Yeah, for sure. It ramps up our communication like you hit on. You have to have all 11 guys on the same page, and you have to anticipate every motion, every shift, and, you know, these guys do it more than almost anybody in the league.
Yeah.
So having the opportunity for us to come out here and work against that, you know, you're seeing one of the best offenses in the league every day. Obviously, we know the best player every day. So it's been fun, man. It's a challenge to come out here and compete with them every day, but it's fun. And like you said, it's sharpening us. Like we're trying
yeah.
to sharpen them.
What has been Sean McDermott's overarching message to the entire team when he gets in? Like, every year's different, every team's different, and he seems to be one of those guys that keeps it kind of fresh.
For sure.
You know, what's his message?
Yeah, I think, you know, we had a meeting last night and then another meeting this morning, and, you know, he wants us to be just a nasty, physical, aggressive defense. And then overall as a team, you know, he wants us to do things the right way, do things how we're supposed to do it, and follow our process. We know what we have to do. We know the work that it takes, the amount of effort and energy and the load that it is. And as long as we're doing that every single day, we can live with the result.
Right.
We're focused on every single day coming in, doing our job, focused on the process and what we need to do to get better. And, you know, the result will take care of itself.
Last one for me. Familiar faces back on the defensive side of the ball. Trey White doesn't need any introduction, but it's Dane Jackson also. What's it like when you get guys back in the fold? It's not the first time it happened. We know Jordan Phillips has come back a couple mm-hmm. of times, actually.
Yep.
So you've seen it happen before. But, you know, Trey was a cornerstone player for this organization. And now to see him back, and now to see him kind of moving the way we all remember him.
For sure.
Those two major injuries, such a struggle. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing him getting back to, like, the kind of movement and change of direction skills that we're accustomed to seeing from
yeah,
him?
Yeah, for sure, man. Even through OTAs, I think you saw, you know, Trey White, like, him be himself. And to just have him as a person be here, you know, he was one of the first guys that I talked to when I got here.
Yeah.
Kind of took me under his wing a little bit. You know, we played under Coach Aranda. He was the defense coordinator at LSU and then my head coach
at Baylor. Okay.
So, you know, we had a connection there, and
gotcha.
he's been one of my favorite people here, man. So to have him back, it's been awesome. And, you know, like I said, he's made plays. He's done it already. He's
yeah.
shown, you know, who he is and what he can do. So it's great to have him back.
Last one for me. So you come back and you've got the reigning MVP on your squad, and once again, expectations for a year that we're – you know, this is the year maybe you don't lose your last game, right? You just keep going, right?
Sir.
How do you – what's in the locker room, the vibe, you guys come back, what's your message to each other? How do you feel about going forward in a season where, once again, your expectations in the room are let's go?
Yeah. No, we know what kind of team we're gonna try to be. You know, like I said earlier, the day-by-day process of the work that we have to put in, we know we're going to be, you know, a competitive team, a good team. It's the little details within what we're doing that'll take us to that next step, and that's what we're here for, to spend as much time around each other, to take as many reps as possible with each other where there's nothing else that matters right now than getting it right and doing it the right way. You know, we know who we can be, what we can do, but we gotta go day by day and take it for that, and, you know, let the result, you know, fall where it may.
Yep. Thanks for the time, as
appreciate
always.
It.
We
yes,
appreciate
sir.
It. Stay hydrated. It's going to be a warm one
yep.
tomorrow.
for
all right.
Sure,
force
sure.
those fluids and stay healthy,
yes,
all right?
Sir. Appreciate you guys.
That's Darrell Bernard joining us here on One Bills Live.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Terry Pegula has Jerry Jones to thank, because I don't know if Pegula would think the way Jerry Jones thinks. Like, he mentioned today with regard to Micah Parsons how he was hurt last year. He even had the number of games he missed wrong. He was too high. He said six when it was four.
Oh, wow.
And hey, I mean, you're hurt. If Pegula did media, would he come off like that, where he would seem like ungrateful and just the kind of comments that make it all harder to get there? He wouldn't necessarily think like that. I'm not accusing him of it.
Yeah, I don't know that, like, specifically that sort of thing, but I think it's good that he doesn't talk.
Yeah, I mean, with the Sabres, I will admit, I kind of would like to hear from him once every 5 years or something when it comes to them. But yeah, I mean, I think it could end up detrimental, and Jerry Jones, it often does.
Lately especially, yeah.
Here he is, Sal Capaccio, back home with training camp on the horizon, just a couple of days away at St. John Fisher. Sal, welcome home.
Thanks, guys. Good to be back, no doubt about that.
Right to work. So,
yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Position battles, or not position battles, storylines by position groups.
You wrote that story before you went away. Who are you kidding? You had it.
I actually wrote it, I believe, on the plane back. You know what, Bulldog? You're right. I wrote it. I started writing it on the way there, on the plane there.
All right.
It was an 8-hour flight. And then I touched it up on the way back home.
It isn't like there are so many battles this year, especially on offense. Right. You started with offense. I mean, offensive line is almost funny. What are we supposed to say here? I committed to this project.
I would say, let's remember, that's why I titled it specifically storylines, not position battles.
Yeah.
There are storylines that aren't position battles. That's the whole point. And you're right, Mike, partly because there really are no position battles on offense other than maybe at the end of the wide receiver depth chart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but all of the starting spots are taken care of. So what I did was I just focused on what is a storyline going into camp. And yes, there are a couple that are position battles. For example, I know it sounds a bit kind of like maybe trivial, but honestly, there could be a backup quarterback battle this year. I mean, Mitch Trubisky and Mike White both have 1 year left in their deal. They're both about the same age. You could actually save about $500,000 by releasing Mitch Trubisky, but you would take on over $1.5 million dead money, but maybe there's something there. And of course, the biggest storyline is James Cook's contract, I think, but that changes Wednesday in some capacity. Either it becomes a much bigger storyline, or we kind of just say, okay, he's here, he's participating, and he's in the last year of his deal like other guys. So every position has a different type of storyline to be focused on.
Right, fair enough. My guess on Cook, and these are only going to be guesses, unless you guys know, have intel, my guess on Cook, I would say, Sal, the likeliest scenario is the hold-in, where he's here but he doesn't participate. Because I still can't get past the idea that, I know it wasn't like every day, but all the tweeting about money was meaningless. I mean, if he's not going to just miss one practice, he's not going to do anything about it. I don't know. That would be what I would consider the likeliest outcome Wednesday. Would you say the same or no?
No, but I do think it's possible. I think to me, the most likely outcome is he is a full participant in practice.
Okay.
And that they just go from there and hope that, you know, something get worked out. If not, he goes into last year of his deal. I remember when he came in for minicamp and he was asked specifically, why did you put those numbers out there? And he kind of didn't have a good answer. He's like, oh, I just kind of wanted to. It was kind of weird, almost like he was backing off of it, to be honest with you. So I certainly see that as a possibility, Mike. But I think the more likely scenario is he's there and he participates.
Do you... I promise I will tie this together, hopefully, in a way that makes sense. Do you know when the first episode of Hard Knocks is going to be on TV? Like, is it a week after camp opens? Is it 2 weeks? Like, what's the timeline there? Because, like, if I'm Cook and I'm trying to, like, turn up any amount of pressure on the Bills, I think that his hold-in being portrayed on TV with Bills fans watching it, he might want to go through that effort just to see if that moves them at all. I mean, I don't know that it would, but I suppose it could, you know, public, just pressure mounting. So I wonder if the Hard Knocks thing, I don't know, changes it at all from anyone's perspective.
So last year, the first Hard Knocks episode was on August 6th, which is a Tuesday night. So that would have been about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So let's just say they go by the same kind of formula this year. I don't know for sure, but I would think that that'd be a good guess. They start on the 23rd, and that would put us at August 5th, okay,
right.
One day. So we're talking just about 2 weeks. I do believe that Hard Knocks could make this a much bigger storyline or maybe less of a storyline. Again, if he shows up, he participates, I think we're all like, okay,
right,
here he goes in the last year of his deal. But what if that happens and he still says something about it that becomes a story, right? I mean, like, I just think there's a lot of things that could have tentacles here that maybe we're thinking about watching, and then Hard Knocks kind of ramps that up a bit.
Yeah, and your timeline is right. Zach just whispered in my ear, Tuesday, August 5th is the season debut of the training camp Hard Knocks. So that'll blend that. So that it's exactly, 2 weeks from tomorrow,
right,
is what we're talking about.
Yeah, and so I would think it would be the first week of practice would be kind of tied into there. I don't know how late they go. Maybe they go up to even Saturday or Sunday of that week, I guess. So first week and a half probably ties into the first Tuesday episode. And then, you know, the next week ties in the next Tuesday episode. And they do cover preseason games and those things. So when you have a preseason game on a Saturday, it generally does air that next Tuesday.
With Sal Capaccio, training camp opens Wednesday. So you did mention already in our conversation and in the article, the back of the wide receiver depth chart. How would you handicap it? Samuel, Elijah Moore, anybody else, guys from last year who you think could mix in here too?
The only one I think is Tyrell Shavers, but at this point, I just think it's going to be a tough spot for him to crack. I think there's five guys. Shakir, Coleman, and Palmer are on this team. I'm pretty sure Samuel's on the team. I just think that, you know, they gave him a bunch of money last year, enough money that it matters financially. They also, you know, really didn't use him the way they wanted to because of the injuries last year. I think that that makes a big deal here, whereas they want to get him going kind of the way he was going towards the end of the year in the playoffs, that Denver game, the big play that he made. Even in Kansas City, if he doesn't get tripped up, you know, on one of the plays, like, it might have been a much bigger difference in the result of the game. But I think that he started to feel healthy. They started to get him involved. I just think they have a lot they want to do with him. And then Elijah Moore is the guy that I just think is on the team. But is it a lock? No. I mean, he's got to go into camp and look, he was a free agent for how many months until after the draft? Nobody signed him. Finally, the Bills did. And I do think he looked good in OTAs and minicamp, but he's still got to show it during training camp. So we'll see. I think it would take probably him not really performing well enough for Tyrell Shavers to bump up there. Now, there is a scenario where the team feels, okay, we just want to have an extra guy for whatever special teams reason.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly,
right,
guys, like, I mean, I just think there's enough players around the roster to be able to fill those spots that you don't have to keep an extra wide receiver, and you could keep someone who's going to contribute more anyway during games if you need to.
Yeah, we were talking about this in the first hour of our show today a little bit, Sal, and I wonder about Moore and Samuel as somewhat duplicates. I mean, I know they don't have them both listed on the depth chart as slot guys. Samuel is listed as Shakir's backup, at least the depth chart I'm looking at, and Moore is listed as Palmer's backup. But, like, Style-wise, body type-wise, I feel like Moore and Samuel are, I don't want to say interchangeable, but they're similar enough to me that I wonder if one or the other could end up in trouble. This is not, you know, of course, injuries and health and whatever could play into that too. I just wonder if they might like a different body type, whether it's for special teams or just to have someone who's more like Coleman in case Coleman can't play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I don't know if you're suggesting, you know, moving completely off of them, but you're right. Maybe adding to the group, right, and keeping somebody else on the roster. Because, honestly, to release Curtis Samuel, guys, would cost them $8.6 million in dead money, and there's only $500,000 savings. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that to me. When it comes to Elijah Moore, a little bit different. They didn't give him a ton of money. They did give him some guarantees, so they could make that work. But if they really wanted to keep a guy that has a bit of a more of a that type of body, yeah, I think that's the case. Let's remember, too, the Bills could say, hey, we could just elevate. What's the chances of losing Tyrell Shavers, let's say,
right,
to waivers, right?
Or Caden Prather, the draft pick from this year.
Exactly,
say.
Right. So you could just put those guys on the practice squad and say, look, if we need those guys, we could just elevate them during the season. Now, the player has a choice here. If you're Tyrell Shavers, you've been with the Bills for 3 years now. This is your third year. You get to the end of camp and they say, look, we're going to release you again, but we want to keep you on the practice squad so we can bring you up and elevate you and have that option. Tyrell Shavers may say, look, I'm not cracking this team. I need to go elsewhere. And I know I could do that anyway as a practice squad member, but let me go and work out for other teams. I don't want to resign to the practice squad. The player has some control in that situation.
And then he could always, if he doesn't find what he likes, if the Bills keep the light on for him, he could always circle back and end up on the practice squad.
That's exactly right. So I don't think you have to rush to get those guys on. If you like Tyrell Shavers enough, if you like Laviska Shenault enough for what he can provide you,
right?
What's really the danger of losing them? If you do, are you really that totally concerned about it? I don't think you're concerned so much that you have to keep them on the roster. Now, there are guys like that you do have to kind of concern yourself with a little bit, right? And say, okay, if we don't keep this guy, are we going to wind up losing him? I'll give you an example. To me, like Dorian Strong to be this guy. Dorian Strong is a sixth-round draft pick. I mean, it's a crowded cornerback room. But if you waive Dorian Strong, it's a very likely outcome is someone's claiming him, and you just spent a sixth-round pick on a guy that you thought maybe could make your team and help you, and because of numbers, you didn't, and then you lose him. This happened to Alex Austin a few years ago, who wound up then picking off Josh Allen in the game a couple years later, right, or that year. But, you know, not that he's become a great player, but these things happen. Like, you've got those decisions are real at the end of training camp.
Sal, do you have a kind of a feel for what the Samuel dead cap penalty would mean in this equation? It's $12 million, $9 million cap hit, $12 million dead. Are the Bills the kind of team where they're at right now in terms of the cap where that would mean a lot? It's not a small number, I know.
I think it's 8.6 now. It's post-June 1st, Mike.
Okay.
I think the pre-June 1st, I'm looking at over the cap. His dead money on a release pre-June 1st would have been $12 million. His post-June 1st would have been $8.6 million. I don't think the Bills want to carry all this dead money, a ton of it, but I think they're at a spot now where they've been much more willing to if it's going to help the team, and they would save $500,000. Is that enough to make a dent? I just feel like they would think it's not a great investment, especially considering this is a player, I think, judging by the way they've talked about him, this goes beyond money for me. To me, I think Curtis Samuel, I've just heard a lot of clues and cues from them, Josh Allen talking about him, Brandon Bean talking about him, that they really believe, Joe Brady, that he just wasn't able to be integrated because of the toe injury and how it impacted him last year. And I think that they really felt and feel still that he can be a really important part of what they do. I don't know, I want to say big part, like what does that mean, you know, like snaps-wise, but just to make a matchup, put him in the backfield, put him in the slot, put him outside, have that ability in different downs and distances to be able to use him the way they wanted to and they weren't able to.
Right. Okay. How does Kincaid figure in here as we get things rolling in your article, tight end, Kincaid, his strength? I'd like to hear you elaborate on that. Are you thinking that maybe one of the first storylines of camp is what he looks like and what they say about any changes to his, you know, strength or whatever?
I do. I think that one of the first things we're going to be looking at and fans will be looking at, and you're going to get a lot of people analyzing this, and there's going to be Zapruder film on this guy, right? Going like, okay, look at his bicep a little bit bigger. Look at his pecs a little bit bigger. And, oh, no, his legs didn't get bigger.
What kind of braces does he have on, or wraps, or whatever, right?
Exactly. So we're going to see all of that. I think fans do want to see, media is going to want to see, everybody's going to want to see how and know that he's gotten bigger and stronger and that he's more durable. He's overcome the knee injuries. Like, that's going to be a big part of it. It's not just what he physically looks like when he walks onto the practice field. It's also, what does he look like when he's running down the seam? Is there any hitch right there? Is he going off the field every once in a while to talk to trainers? All of that matters because this is a really important player for the Bills. They made him a first-round pick a couple years ago. He had a really nice rookie year. He set, you know, franchise records for rookies and tight ends. And then it just didn't happen last year because of a lot of it was because of the injuries. And then we heard at the end of the year the play strength and being able to do that. So I do think it's to me, that is the storyline at tight end. It is Dalton Kincaid's size and health. That is a storyline, though, that becomes one right away. We all watch, we analyze, and then it kind of goes away. And then it becomes one again when the regular season starts.
Right. Sal will be shooting this video and then selling it to Life Magazine within a few hours to capitalize, a la Zapruder.
Life Magazine. Love it. Sal, you mentioned backup quarterback right at the outset of this conversation, and we just sort of ran past it and kept going. recognize that nobody's taken a snap yet, at least in the summer. I mean, we had spring and OTAs and minicamp and whatever. I'm not a Trubisky believer at all. Like, I just think they're in, you know, obviously, look, the drop-off is enormous no matter who you're going to have, most likely. But I'm pretty much done with Trubisky. Do you think White is live to win that job?
I do. I just wonder how live. I think he'll get his shot, Bulldog. I think this will come down to preseason. It'll come down to how these guys play in the preseason, where they're both going to get opportunities. But I think that Mike White has a shot here. You know, the Bills went out and grabbed him and, you know, brought him in last year during preseason, and they liked him enough at the end of the year. They wanted him to play a little bit. Now, look, some of this was – remember the whole situation with he had already been out of elevations, so they couldn't bring him up, and yet you didn't want all these guys in Week 18 to have the play, so how do you do this? Well, what they did was they said, all right, so we're just going to sign him to a contract. But to do that, we're going to sign him to a two-year deal, which one game last year counted as the first year, and then now here's your second year. So he's under contract. He's ready to go. Mitch Trubisky's under contract for one more year each. I do think that Mike White has an opportunity here. Now, handicapping it, I think they feel comfortable with Mitch Trubisky. He's been a starter in this league. He's had a little bit of success in this league. Mike White's been a career backup. So from that standpoint, yeah, it's probably leaning Trubisky. But I think Mike White has a shot here. Look, guys, I know it sounds crazy. They really like Shane Buechele. I can tell you that. I just don't think that he's ready to be able to be thrust into having that particular type of opportunity. Right. But I wouldn't be surprised if maybe 2 weeks into camp we're going, you know, Shane Buechele's getting a little bit more run than I thought. I'll just say it that way because I do know they like Shane Buechele a lot. They love his toughness. They love his moxie. I mean, he was in Kansas City with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, and he comes to Buffalo. And, you know, I think all of it put together that you're probably looking at least us talking about who the backup quarterback is a couple of weeks into camp.
Allen in the preseason, you think he gets a quarter or less in the home game and that's it? Or would you guess differently?
I wonder, yeah, that probably makes sense, Mike. I think I'm thinking out loud about the Chicago game and joint practice. If you remember last year, the Bills went to Pittsburgh. They had the joint practice on Friday. They had the game on Sunday, or was it Thursday, Saturday, whichever it was. They had the game. Josh was going to play, but the field got really wet.
Right.
Remember pregame?
Yep.
And he did not play in that game, so therefore he didn't play at all. And I wonder if that's the plan again. Hey, let Josh give him the joint practice, and that maybe the joint practice is a good spot to kind of let him see what's going on, kind of a little mini game plan or whatever. Let's utilize that in the game, give him some opportunity so they know what's coming. Maybe that's something that they wind up doing. That's a national TV game, by the way, in Chicago on a Sunday night. Not that that necessarily matters, you know, but, you know, if you're talking about home games, maybe something like that comes into play. So I think it's one or the other. It's certainly not going to be week three against Tampa, I would think. And by then, you know, you're looking at the other three guys we talked about.
Yeah, or maybe even another guy that isn't on the team right now that they just bring in to throw passes in that last game and then send him on his way.
It's happened before.
Right.
Sal, you're just back, I know, but are you following the Yankees cheating scandal?
No, this is the first time hearing about what's going on here.
I don't know of a Yankees cheating scandal either.
They recently played Seattle, and the Mariners played a huge inning and a comeback in this game, and the Mariners complained that they were the runner on first could see the pitcher's grip, and there'd be a runner on second, and you see the Yankees base runners just gesticulating kind of wildly, like they're communicating with each other what the pitch is going to be. And they just sort of blew up this Mariners reliever. And then they went to Atlanta this weekend. And yesterday there was more of this. Yeah, there was more of this yesterday. So even though the catcher isn't putting, you know, fingers down for the sign,
right,
teams are, as they would, you know,
finding an edge.
Finding other ways to, you know, Aaron Boone said it's like a part of the game. They didn't exactly hide from it. But, you know, finding ways to find edges. So right now, though, the Yankees, I think, are the team for this that – other teams are rankled by.
Well, what I did see was I was watching the series this weekend, and Jazz Chisholm was getting into it with somebody.
That was why.
And you're right. And like, he's getting into every game, it seems like. And he was pointing in the dugout, and he was doing like, stop your yapping, go away. Then he was pointing to his head. Remember the whole yes. Pedro and Posada?
I'm in your head, right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or it was more like a, I'm going to throw it, you're going to
right.
throw it,
and that right. kind of thing. Okay.
And nobody kind of knew. And then they had extra video footage of the Braves manager or somebody in the dugout, one of the coaches, they were kind of going, they were going at it with Jazz. And then they went back and traced, where did this start? And Jazz was on second doing what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Mike, right? He was kind of relaying the signal. So I think this is all kind of born from all of that. So I don't know. I don't know where all this goes, but I did see that. I don't know. I haven't seen it labeled as cheating in any way. I do think that there's some sort of, you know, while you're relaying these signs and, you know, how you're doing all this and, you know, don't point at my head. I do know this. The Yankees have a monster series starting tonight in Toronto.
Yes.
Toronto's three games up. And, you know, they could really take a stranglehold of the East, or the Yankees could catch them. And it's such a big series. The Yankees basically intentionally came out of the break, went to Atlanta, and set up their rotation to make sure that they have Rodon and Fried going against the Blue Jays.
Yep. Jays are really hot. So yep. that'll be cool.
I may want to alter my position on this at a future date should the subject come up again. But I think as long as you're not using garbage cans and video cameras, like, I'm okay. Like, if you trust your base runners to discern the pitcher's grip, all right.
I mean, Raleigh for Seattle, the big dumper, as you like to call him, big dumper. Home run derby, all that. He said basically it's on us.
Yeah.
So he said both things, you know, we got to do better at
concealing that and concealing. Like, yeah, right, yeah.
Okay. Mike, do you watch, I know you watch some of the broadcasts, do you like Joe Girardi as a analyst?
I do in one way. I mean, he knows a lot, obviously.
Yeah.
He comes off to me like somebody he's not trying to impress. You know, a lot of these guys are just sort of like they know all the phrases and they just sort of like they're forcing it a little bit. I don't think Girardi cares about that. So I like him for that.
Yeah, he did the games against Atlanta, and I really enjoyed listening to him. And I have in the past, but he talked about this and he said, hey, and I get he's on the Yankees broadcast. We'll take it with that. But he did say, hey, as a manager and catcher, he said, my philosophy has always been make sure they can't take your signs. Like, that's on you. You got to figure out a way to make sure that they're not taking them and stealing them and relaying them. So he agreed. Like, hey, that's on us. We got to figure out a better way to do that if they're able to pick them up.
I also like that Girardi is a good listener. It's the number one thing in all of this. And once in a while, you'll hear him. Michael Kay will say something, and you'll say, why do you think that? Like, and that can be a good conversation. Mm-hmm. Everybody should have to be able to defend, you know, what they say. And he's, I think, sort of smart enough, but also at ease enough to be able to, like, I'm not thinking about the next thing necessarily. I'm just listening to you.
Right. Yeah.
So I like him for that, too. Sal, we like listening to you as well. Welcome back. And it's going to be a fun week.
It's going to be really fun. And I'll have my one storyline for every defensive position tonight. And we can talk about that tomorrow.
Okay. Great.
What is the best thing you did? What's the thing? Like, somebody, you run into a listener, like, how was Italy? Like, what's the thing you're going to tell them?
Thing I'm going to tell them. Boy, it was so good. You know, here's what I say. A really kind of a minor, just unbelievable to think about, just to put this in your brain. We went to a lot of cities. I loved Rome. I loved Florence. I think Rome and Florence were my favorites, even though Venice was amazing. Lake Como was amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm a history buff. I love history, and I think that's why I love Rome. But we go to Assisi, which is like this very, very quaint, like, religious town in Perugia, and it's just really quiet and awesome. Churches everywhere. We walk through the gates, and there's a walking tour we're taking, and the woman giving the walking tour says, okay, this wall you just passed that has the gate, that dates to 300 years before Christ. I mean, what are we doing? That's unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
My house is built in 1901. I tell people how old my house is.
Right. I know. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Europe has that. Yeah. You can't.
Yeah.
Right. They got scoreboard on that.
I saw the tweet of this picture, by the way. I couldn't believe there'd be slot machines lined up against that wall, but that sign of the times. I suppose that's just how the church has to
raise money however they can.
That's right.
Yeah. Did you see the other picture? The craziest, wildest part about this trip might have been, we were walking in Florence, and this guy is coming the other way, and he stops the group, and he goes, hey, Bills. People are wearing Bills gear, Bills shirts. Hey, Bills Mafia, Bills. We're like, oh, you're a Bills fan? And he says, I'm one of the new minority owners with Terry Pegula.
Yep.
And he happened to be in Florence and noticed us. His name is Mike Jew. He is one of a higher up at Bank of America, and sure enough, it checked out, and I set up, started talking to him. It was great. I mean, you know, someone says that, you don't know, right?
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, it's this dude. Yep.
Oh, you're a Bills fan? I'm literally James Cook, actually. I can't believe you don't recognize me. Very good. Thanks for your time, Sal.
You got it.
That's Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearances always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
As a receiver, I mean, the separation that he can create with his feet, I think that off the line, just the way that he's really taken ownership of it and he cares about his craft. He's just an easy guy to throw to, body language, eyes, and I feel like his catch radius is some of the best I've been around.
Bills quarterback Josh Allen speaking about Josh Palmer. Those two getting their training camp debut yesterday.
Has Josh Allen ever completed a pass to someone named Josh?
Ooh, that's a great question.
That is a great question.
I doubt it.
I think I would doubt it, too.
I don't think so. I don't. This is where you pull
I'm gonna up. I'll look at a list.
I want you to pull up the trivia.
Terrible question to ask. It's 7 o'clock in the morning.
Name that Allen has completed the most passes to. We'll work on that for trivia.
Okay.
Coverage of Bills training camp from St. John Fisher University brought to you by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys. And driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. Jeremy White, Sneaky Joe DiBiase, and joining us here from training camp is Matt Bove of course, It's Always Game Day in Buffalo with Sal Capaccio. You guys got a big event tonight.
Yeah, we got a big show at Bar Build. The Bar Build location down in Rochester starts at 7 o'clock. Sal says that they are getting phone calls off the hook and that there's expected to be a lot of people there. So I am hoping that's the case. It's always a really fun night, so there should be a good turnout. I know there will be good wings, and that's a nice combination.
Yeah, so
that's a good spot, too, though, where you can just show up and go to the bar. And
well, that's why it's nice. There's so much space there. So even if it is absolutely packed, like it's not like they're going to run out of space. Right.
You're
listening to a podcast. There's big speakers. You're going to hear the speakers from all over the place.
Yeah, 1129 Empire Boulevard in Rochester tonight, the event. The podcast is from 7 to 8. The event's 7 to 8. You guys will be there probably
we'll be there
before and after.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know how the media has its evenings here at St. John Fisher.
A lot of schmoozing.
Yes, that's right.
A lot of schmoozing
that's
is
right.
the word I would use.
That's right. All right, Matt, so day one of camp in the books. It's funny, I was telling Joe, you know, you're out there day one, and you're watching whatever you come to, and then afterwards I'm driving home listening and reading, whether it's here you or Matt Parrino. Like, all right, what's everyone's observations? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the observations kind of lined up. Christian Benford looked great.
He's good.
And the defense as a whole, I mean, it's red zone stuff early on, but the defense I thought kind of just looked sticky and looked like they were faster maybe than years past. It's day one, I know. But I thought it was a good look.
Yeah, I thought Benford looked very good. I thought there were a couple reps, even though they're not in pads, where Bosa just ate. And I was like, wow, like that's interesting. Because you want to know what you're going to get out of that guy, right? And I think that's a really big unknown going into the season. And I was also very collectively impressed with three of their first four draft picks on the defensive side. I thought Hairston had a nice day. He cut off a couple passes. And you could definitely see his speed. I thought TJ Sanders flashed continuously. And then Deion Walker at one point, we're sitting there watching, and he took three guys and individually just shoved all of them together into Mitch Trubisky. And when you see him out there, it's crazy how much bigger he is than even his peers. He is that big. So for him to no longer be restricted, he was restricted for mandatory minicamp, which is the limitations on his injury. So that's a good sign that those restrictions aren't there. So this new wave and this new defensive line that they've pieced together, you know, one day, let's all hold our breath. Yep. But so far, so good.
So far, so good. And they were working against an offensive line that did not have Spencer Brown. Yeah. Of course, he's missing. We'll see any sort of timeline on that. But, you know, this defensive front with Bosa, he had some interesting comments yesterday about the atmosphere here. And I think it's interesting. Someone brought up to me the difference between the two teams in town. The fact that there's not a lot going on seems to help the Bills.
Yeah.
Because these players all just hang out together. Here's Bosa saying he hung out with teammates more in 6 weeks than maybe his entire career because – this team just basically hangs out and goes to Josh's house. It seems like that's pretty much what it is.
you want the football guys, right?
Yeah.
And if you're a football guy, these are the teams that you want to play for. The fan base is rabid. They absolutely love their team. But also, like, you're spending a lot of time with each other. And in a market like Buffalo, there are not nearly as many distractions as there would be in Los Angeles or in Miami or in some of these other major cities in the NFL. And some people hear that and they think it's a knock on Buffalo. Well, I guess it depends on how you look at it. But if you're a football guy, you want to spend time with your guys. I mean, it almost feels like the Bills have a continuation of training camp when they get back to Orchard Park. They always talk about how much they love spending all this time together when they're at training camp. Well, when they get back, that doesn't really change. The only thing that comes into the mix is now you're mixing in spouses and girlfriends and kids and other responsibilities. But you're still going to make time to be spending time with your teammates outside of the facility, which I think has been a big reason why the Bills have had this, you know, run of success. That and Josh Allen's really, really good.
It's been talked about as like kind of a – players have said this. Maybe Vaughn had said this when he got here. Like, it's kind of like college football here. And I think whenever I hear that, I think about the fan base for that and how the fans are. But that kind of could be all this – player stuff too, like them hanging out with each other. It's not like they're in dorm rooms next to each other like they would be playing college football. But that could also be what they mean when they say like it's more of a college-y type atmosphere, as college as you could get for the NFL.
Yeah, and you also think too, like these guys, especially in Buffalo, are legitimate celebrities. If you walk around Western New York, you know who. Let's say 75% of the guys on the Bills, at least the starters, are. So they don't go out as a group a ton in public because, you know, like they can't just show up to Music on Main or to Canal Fest.
Reed Ferguson can show up to Music on Main and he's going to get recognized.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they hang out together at their houses. They have cookouts. They have, I mean, I did a story with Connor McGovern a couple years ago. He legitimately, every Friday night before home games, has massive pizza parties with 40 to 50 members of his team. And that is their way of just like hanging out with each other one last time before each game. They bring their spouses, they bring their family members. And he said there's a waiting list to get on this because we just sit there and we cook up pizza and appetizers. And you talk about what's better than just hanging out with your friends in a basement, watching sports on a Friday night, and getting ready for a big game a couple days later. Like, I feel like that kind of perfectly encapsulates what the locker room is like.
Day two of training camp today. We'll hear from Joe Brady at 9:15. He'll go for his opening press conference. You know, it's funny. This is a reminder that when training camp starts, it's the Bills against the Bills.
Yep.
So if Christian Benford and Max Harrison have a good day, that means the receivers they were covering did not necessarily have a good day. And I saw a little bit Matt Perino, who's over here with us as well. He wrote up about Keon Coleman. I had the same kind of observation that Coleman, there are a couple times where they were not breadbasket drops, but they're contested catch drops. And you know, there's a lot riding on him this year and what he can do in year two. And I thought, not the best start, of course. Long way to go, but he had some trouble yesterday in some contested catches.
Yeah, I agree, but I also wonder if a player like that, if he needs to be seen with the pads on and with more contact because that is his area of expertise, like I'm going to bully you there, you would think that that would also translate to when they're not wearing pads, but I wonder how physical he wants to get in those settings. I'm not trying to give him a pass or anything. I think there's two big X factors for the Bills. Dalton Kincaid and Keon Coleman going into the season, and what they get out of those guys I think will tell us a lot about how this season is. So far, I think Dalton Kincaid has had a good summer. I think his mandatory minicamp was strong, and I think he had a good first day of camp. Keon Coleman, I don't necessarily – I didn't notice it as a bad day. I certainly didn't notice it as a good day. But I also do think until we get to day four, which is usually when they put the pads on, that's when I want to try and start seeing which players look good, which players struggle. It feels like these are, you know, the first couple days of school where you're filling out the index cards and asking people a random fact about themselves.
Especially for Coleman, right? Because Coleman is probably going to have to play a physical brand on the outside. He's going to be lined up on the line of scrimmage. Like, these would be the days, like, we'll get to the secondary. In fact, we can't hear if you want. Like, these would be the days where I'd expect a guy like Max Harrison to stand out.
Yes.
Because he's so fast, and before the pads come out and it gets more physical, the guys with the speed, I think in theory, would be the ones that you would see stand out early.
Yeah, and I think like with the wide receivers, the separators would separate more because they don't have pads on. So I feel like Keon Coleman, we all know, that's not a separator. That's not his area of expertise. So you wonder how much would he be able to shine. And that's the other thing, too. I really came away liking Max Harrison's first day. But then you make the point, they're not in pads. He's already the fastest guy on the team, one of the fastest players in the NFL. He should look really, really fast in this setting. And he did. So that's why that's a good sign. Going back to your point at the beginning, like Christian Benford, he's just so technically sound with everything he does, and to realize that that player is still 24 years old. You know, they had the list come out a couple weeks ago, ESPN, the top 10 corners in the NFL. He doesn't even get a vote.
There are 29 corners mentioned, and he didn't get a vote.
That's crazy.
Others receiving votes, him not being on that list at least, is offensive.
No, yeah. No personnel person even said Christian Benford.
And there's some reasons for it. I was talking to Carl Jones about this a little bit because obviously that's his area of expertise is the secondary. And he was saying the fact that he's a late pick hurts him. The fact that he doesn't follow receivers also hurts him just because a lot of the top guys do that. And the fact that he just doesn't get a ton of interceptions, you know. Some people see that as a negative. You want all of your corners to probably get as many interceptions as possible, but you know, he's just a very technically sound, steady, solid player. But would any of us be shocked if he's one of the five best players on the Bills roster this year? Yeah. I wouldn't be.
No, I might even expect it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's right.
One of the top five players. And then, you know, you get to the secondary as a whole. Benford there. We've talked a little bit about Hairston. I said to Joe, we should be on Hairston pick six watch out here just because the style he plays, it's a matter of time before, hey, Maxwell Hairston just picked off insert quarterback here and took it back the distance.
Yeah, and what's interesting, too, is for some reason when you were saying that, I was thinking about a conversation that I had. Now that we have the hindsight of knowing that they've drafted Hairston, it makes sense when we just talked about Benford and how steady and consistent and solid he is. Maybe they're taking a swing for the fence with the upside, and that's what Hairston is, right? I don't know if you need another guy who's steady and consistent and solid. Like, you want your players to be as good as possible, but none of us will be surprised when we watch Hairston jump in front of a pass and take it all the way, but that also might mean he gets burned every once in a while. And I think you live with that when you have somebody like Benford on the other side of you, you know, the risk and reward and how they play off of each other. So I think it's not a matter of if, but when Hairston ultimately ends up doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think for Bills fans, the hope is that he's doing it in games.
Surprising at all that the defense did look more impressive yesterday?
Every time we get out here, Capaccio always reminds me, you know, the defense is usually ahead of the offense early on. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, but the offense led the NFL in almost everything last year, so I thought they would be more ahead. It was also interesting that Josh made a point after practice to say, hey, everybody, we had a really good day. I was throwing the ball away a lot. I wanted to make sure I protected the football. Mm. I almost thought he was, like, talking to Hard Knocks at that point and being like, hey, Hard Knocks, I'm much better than this, but I didn't want to make any mistakes on the first day of camp.
Joe and I were watching. We kind of commented. Again, it's the Bills against the Bills, so if the defense is good, the offense isn't. He did have a lot of, like, scrambly throwaways.
Yeah. Oh, there were so many times when he was rolling out to his right, and that's usually when he is the most deadly, and he just threw it out to the track behind the field. And I'm like, okay, you know, he didn't throw it across his body trying to find somebody who's cutting back into space. Mm-hmm. I guess in a game it might be a little bit different. But, yeah, I would say overall, like, the defense collectively – I'm expecting more than I think some people are with the defense. I think they're going to be better than maybe the outside perspective is. Because, you know, you see all these different podcasts and lists about the best defenses in the NFL. And the Bills at this point really aren't mentioned a ton as kind of the best of the best. And I don't think they're going to be the best of the best, but I think they might be more consistent than they have been.
To James Cook. Yesterday, Brandon Bean spoke about Cook quite a bit. We could debate whether or not they're going to sign him, how this ultimately finishes out. Did you think the tone was softer, different, changed than a couple months ago when it sounded like it was a cold war between the two sides?
Yeah, when we were at the owners' meetings in Florida, I was like, okay, I don't think James Cook is going to play for the Bills again after this season. I still don't know if I feel that way, but there was a specific quote from Bean yesterday talking about James Cook where he said, I hope at this time next year we're talking about this and James Cook is out there practicing. And that, you know, perked the ears up a little bit of like, oh, you know, maybe there is a way that James Cook sticks around. I don't know if that means he's going to get a new contract. Maybe that means they franchise tag him, and then we're having these same conversations in a year from now about if he's happy or about if he's actually going to play. Is he holding in? Is he holding out? But I did feel like there was a little bit of a softer tone from Bean's standpoint and maybe a bit more willingness to get something done with Cook if they can find that place where they're clearly trying to meet in the middle. Because I'm sure the Bills have a number in their head. Like, we're not going over this number for a running back. Especially a running back who plays 50%, less than 50% of snaps.
You feel like it's more likely that this is kind of the end of the contract negotiations and the saga with him being on the field and practicing? Or, I don't know, could the Bills also take it as, all right, he showed up. He's here.
Yeah.
You know, let's give him one more offer with a couple million more guaranteed or whatever as a kind of a show of good faith.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. And that's why I think Cook did the right thing yesterday to see if maybe that's where it goes. If, hey, I don't want to be a distraction. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be, you know, the big story of training camp. I'm here to work. And then they've done the extensions a couple weeks before the season several times.
So Dawson Knox right before the
Dawson
season.
Dawson Knox
maybe?
Did it.
Spencer Brown last year, right?
Did it. Deion Dawkins before the last extension that he ended up getting. Like, a lot of these guys have done that right before the season. So maybe they follow suit, and he's the. And if it's not him, the only other name I think that makes sense, or there's two other names, are Connor McGovern and David Edwards, because I think both of those players they really, really like, and they've got them on really good bargains right now. Mm-hmm. So if they want to try and, you know, continue to solidify that offensive line, those are the other two kind of right before the season extension candidates.
The Cook situation. Do you think they'll ultimately come to an extension?
No.
Or do you think that he still is more likely to walk next year?
I do. I think that he's more likely to walk. I just don't know if the Bills are willing to go as high as what he wants, and I don't know if what he wants is what he and his brother are posting on X about, if it's quite that much. But if you're that far off, or if it's been that far off up to this point, I don't know if the Bill... His value is so high after a 16-touchdown season, but he only does play 50% of the snaps. I think James Cook is a very good running back, and I think the Bills are a better team with James Cook on their team. But if he truly wants $13, $14, $15 million, I don't know if the Bills think that's more valuable than using that money elsewhere, and like we were talking about before we came on, using a draft pick and drafting a running back, or maybe Ray Davis becomes your feature running back, and then you take a fourth-round running back, and that becomes your new Ray Davis. Because the one game James Cook missed last year in the regular season, Ray Davis was really good. Now, that changes when you have a huge workload added onto your plate, but I think they really like the backfield. I think they think strength and numbers. Because if one of those guys is missing, they still have two others who I think they believe can really kind of carry the weight.
Matt Bovee joining us. They've got an event tonight. It's always game day in Buffalo tonight. There'll be a live recording of the podcast, so you can attend that. It's at Barbill East here in Rochester on Empire Boulevard. You and Sal. We'll talk to Sal coming up at 8 o'clock today.
And to put full circle on the question that we led off with, is Josh ever completed a pass to someone named Josh? There's one.
Really?
Yeah.
He's completed a pass to a guy named Josh.
Yeah.
Not an interception?
No. Scored a touchdown.
Josh.
It's kind of a trick question. The answer is Josh Allen.
Oh, that's a great.
Well,
right, that's good. Right.
It's a trick question. Kind of
pass completed to Amari Cooper, but Josh did score.
He scored
the touchdown
on a pass through.
That's right.
Just saying. He's the only one though.
I really hope somebody started listening to this interview and they've been driving in their car this whole time and they've been screaming at the radio, "It's Josh Allen! It's Josh Allen!" And then you finally just gave them that moment.
Yes. What can't he do? Right?
You put my mind in a pretzel right there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, hey, Hard Knocks is here too. We're seeing the crew out here. They've got their Hard Knocks crew shirts, and you know, you see boom mics, and there's some cameras we're walking underneath. I'm excited about it. I think Bills fans should be really excited about getting the inner look. I was talking to Kevin Kearns of the Bills, like, what's different, and the number of players that are mic'd up. Mm-hmm. Like in a normal game, sometimes one guy's mic'd up. For these practices, 4 and 5 players are mic'd up for this process. So you're going to get to know these players in a different way. Yesterday, K.J. Hamler's mic'd up. So I don't know if you know anything about K.J. Hamler, but you might find out in episode 1 a little bit about him.
Here's my take. I don't think they were initially excited to be selected on Hard Knocks. Now I think they love it. Even though they might not say that they love it, I think that they collectively have a lot to gain. Not necessarily, like Josh doesn't. Everybody already knows who Josh Allen is. He is a superstar in the NFL. But a lot of people outside of this market don't really know a ton about Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean, Khalil Shakir, Spencer Brown, Deion Dawkins.
Yeah.
These guys are going to be heavily featured in some capacity on the show, and also the production value is just so good. Like, I saw the little teaser that they posted yesterday, and even me, like, I'm pretty close to this, and I was like, wow, this is going to be good. Yeah. Like, I'm excited, even just as a consumer, to watch this, to see what I don't ever get to see. So that'll be fun.
Did they turn that around that quickly?
No.
Those were practice clips from yesterday?
No, they were just, I think, clips from last year, regular practice from the last couple months.
That makes more sense.
Obviously, game clips.
It was like an hour after practice.
I was like, that is so unbelievably impressive.
Yeah.
So I don't think it is that, though.
Gotcha.
Matt Bove. All right, thanks for joining us.
Thanks,
you guys. Are you guys are going for a run, or you already did?
Oh, we already did a little workout with Matt Perino and Dom Tibbetts over there. Now we're going to run to go get something for breakfast and then walk back. So that's the nice little getting early, the nice little benefit of getting up and getting early.
And before the weather gets the 98 degrees today or whatever.
115 heat index.
Oh. That's what we're looking at today?
Well, that's the heat index for – it was – I haven't checked this morning, but a couple days ago when I checked for today, that's what they said. So when I was packaging my clothes, I specifically packed light-color clothing for today.
Yep. Yeah. I'm wearing the lightest shirt possible.
I was going to say linen. In my closet.
I like that.
I was gonna
linen.
Say,
like, I'm like, I'm wearing linen today for sure.
And Jeremy's in a hoodie.
For now.
It makes no sense.
For now. At 9:02, when the sun comes between these two, the pavilion and the stadium,
regular polo,
it gets to be 100 degrees right here. I've got the golf polo underneath. All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks, guys.
Great work as always, and good luck tonight with the event with Sal for It's Always Game Day in Buffalo.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Matt Bove here from Buffalo Bills training camp.
The Bills have just made some roster moves. How about that? Nobody on PUP as of right now. Maybe that happens later today. Maybe tomorrow. Maybe not at all. That would be great if they don't have anybody there. But here's what they've done. They have signed wide receiver David White. Originally signed by the Jags as a UFA after the 24 draft. And spent a season there. They've also signed tight end Matt Sokol. He spent 2024 on the Steelers practice squad, originally an undrafted free agent with the Chargers in 2019. He's been around a little bit, Matt Sokol. But notably, they've released a wide receiver. I believe it's, you say his name, it's Kelly Akiyari. But also, Jake Camarda has been released. He's the punter. Now, I actually will tell you, I've been saying, I thought Jake Camarda would win the punting job over Brad Robbins. I mean, you look at what he's done in the league so far, Jake Camarda actually twice with the Buccaneers was top five in the NFL in yards per punt. The question was, could he place punts? Could he be a guy that could really kind of do it in situationally? And maybe the Bills just felt, yep, we're okay. We have one punter, Brad Robbins. We're going to roll with him. I don't think that means Brad Robbins is guaranteed to make the 53. You could do anything at the end of camp where you feel like you need another guy. You go out there, you claim somebody, you sign somebody. But the Bills now down to one punter on the roster. That's Brad Robbins. All right.
Also from Ian Rappaport, the Bills have activated Landon Jackson from PUP.
So Landon Jackson is coming off the PUP list. There we go. All right. All of it adds up to a great time to bring in my buddy Matt Perino on the Wester Hotline. Shout podcast, of course, Ryan Talbot, Syracuse.com. Lots of stuff happening this morning as we get ready, Matt.
Man, I'm typing a mile a minute here.
I know, right? I feel bad. I'm like, Matt's probably got this news happening. He's got to report it and tweet it out. We're doing the show here, so it's all happening pretty fast here.
It's all good. A lot of fans immediately like, wait a second, this doesn't quite add up. I mean, a couple of our beat colleagues, mainly Joe Biscaglia, cough, cough, were setting up this punter competition for this summer, and now we sit here with Brad Robbins. But I think back a couple years ago, if you remember, they brought in Sam Martin really late in the game. I mean, teams make roster decisions all summer long, all the way in the lead up to the start of the season. The Bills end up going through the camp and the preseason with Robbins and don't like what they have, then they can always look to the veteran market to bring in another guy.
Yep.
But he might have made an impression. Like, I haven't talked – we'll probably get to talk to Sean tomorrow about Robbins and maybe what he did over the spring to maybe at least win the job to go into camp, to not want to have that competition play out in the summer. But the Akiyari, the receiver that you mentioned that was released, I thought he struggled quite a bit in the spring just from his hands perspective. Like, they go through the individual work and consistently dropping balls. And I just feel like when the competition on the back end is so solid with guys like LaVisca Chenault and Tyrell Shavers and KJ Hamler, they're going to continue to cycle in guys. If you're not making plays or if you're not able to kind of do the basic stuff, you're not going to last very long.
Yeah, I just got a tweet here from a fan. Getting connected with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Dalamana says, are we worried about punter situation in relation to Bass having a new holder? I do think there's a bit of an overreaction to that sometimes, but I do think it's also a solid question considering it's been something we've talked about. But now you get Brad Robbins, and that is interesting, right? Where you made the point, Sam Martin came in, you know, late. It is a position that you don't want to be messing too much with the operation of the snapper, the holder, and the kicker. And I think that's probably why you want to get to a guy a little bit earlier rather than later.
And maybe they've just determined over the spring that, like, getting Robbins in place and maybe building a little bit of a rapport with Tyler Bass is good enough to send this into the summer. And they're saying, like, listen, maybe we take a little bit of a step back just from a punting perspective, but what could it mean for Tyler Bass? I mean, I know he's had Martin the last couple of years. I don't know what level of holder, to your point. I do think that kind of gets blown up a little bit. But I think continuity is important, too. Like, for Bass, building that, like, rapport, I think early on it was it Bajorquez, or was he gone already by the time that Bass got into the league? I'm trying to think.
It's a great question. I think Bass came in after, if I remember right.
Okay. So, you know, either way, it's just one of those situations where the Bills are very calculated with these kinds of moves and putting guys in certain positions to be successful. And who knows? I mean, maybe Robbins came in and Chris Tabor, the new special teams coordinator, this guy's been around the league a long time. He knows what he wants in all of these roles. And maybe Robbins just did enough already to say, hey, we don't have to waste our time. Let's build the relationship with these two guys because we're so convinced that we like where we're at with him right now.
While I was in Italy, it was the Bills had placed Landon Jackson on PUP, and you were the person I saw that reported that the Bills, that he should be ready to go, that you were told, hey, according to your sources, that he would be ready to go for camp. And that looks like it's the case, Matt. They have activated Landon Jackson off the PUP list, which is good news.
I mean, it's nice to have a win every once in a while, right, Sal?
Yeah, that's right.
You never know these days with people saying people aren't good. I remember right before the start of minicamp, no shade to Adam Schefter. I like Adam, but like sometimes you get fed some bad stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting today seeing Tom Pelissero come out with obviously the Cook side of things, right? Like probably pumping like what his representatives have been sending along. But I don't see, and not to get off of your point about Landon Jackson, I don't see the upside for a hold in for James Cook based on everything that he said during minicamp. Like at that, that was the point to really like make one final statement before maybe you could come back to the negotiating table. Now we're here. Now it's prep for the season. He talked about like building up, you know, being a leader and being somebody in the building and building that rapport with his teammates and that bond with the team as they try to go and win a Super Bowl, which James Cook said is important to him. And so I don't know what that would accomplish to help better the pursuit for that goal if he's to come and show up and then just say, yeah, but I'm only going to do this much. Like, I don't think that's going to necessarily be the ticket for him. Landon Jackson, I think this is a really big development because if he were to miss, like, even, like, four or five practices, the slower practices before they put the pads on, I think that would put him at a disadvantage. And we saw what happened to Cole Bishop last year when he missed a couple. So getting him back and healthy, you hope all of these young players are able to stay healthy. Max Hairston with the tweaked hamstring back in the spring. You hope that he's 100% going into this thing so the competitions can start to kind of unfold.
Matt Perino here on the Wester Hotline. Bills open up training camp tomorrow at St. John Fisher. 9:15, Sean McDermott will speak to the media. 9:45, the team will be on the practice field. Then we will hear from Brandon Bean after practice. And yeah, let's stay with that with James Cook because I agree. That to me, that's still the number one storyline. But let's be honest, Matt, it could kind of go away tomorrow, right? If he shows up and just is part of practice and does everything, okay, he's a guy going to last year of his contract. This happens all the time, right? Not a big deal. If he shows up and he doesn't participate in everything, now we have a story on our hands, especially with Hard Knocks out there. So how much could this kind of swing one way or the other, depending on everything that happens?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I never got the vibe. Like, it's hard to read James Cook, right? Like, when he's on the practice field, he's pretty much the same guy no matter what. I mean, he's not super over the top. Like, he's not super chatty. He's not super chatty in his availabilities with us either. So it's hard to get a read with him. It felt like, you know, when he showed up to minicamp, there was a little bit of a, I don't even want to call it an attitude, but just like a subtle frustration. When we spoke to him after practice and the questions started to mount, I felt the frustration a little bit in that as well. But he's kind of gone back. Like, I don't want people to get it twisted. I think James Cook is a great dude. Like, I actually think that, like, he's well-loved in the locker room. Like, guys want to play with him. Guys are rooting for him. Guys want him to get the deal. The part of the thing, the problem is just the way the NFL is structured. When you're paying your quarterback what the Bills are paying him, you only have so much resources to allocate elsewhere. They're paying two Pro Bowl / All-Pro level tackles, almost top of the market money. They're paying an edge rusher, not top of the market money, but a pretty healthy contract. They signed a corner. They signed their middle linebacker. They signed their slot receiver. And by the way, their first round draft pick at tight end, who's kind of the starter, right? His backup, quote unquote, is making $12.5 million per season. So there's guys on this team that are making a lot of money. And I get the arguments for, like, the salary. You can do whatever you want with the salary cap. I've seen people bantying about this morning about a potential Trey Hendrickson deal. I've been on board with that since, you know, March. Like, find a way to get it done. Find a way to make it work. I think that that would be just a potential game-changing type move with all the other moves that they've had. I don't know if it's really doable, but it's just hard to fit it all in. And then if you're taking the stance that you want top-of-the-market money, when you want it, you're basically putting yourself into the category of Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley. You have to ask yourself a hard question as an organization is, like, is he that level of player? Is he maybe a tier below, which is not bad, but it's just a tier below, and we just can't reach that kind of dollar amount year over year, especially at that position.
Do you agree with me when I say that I said earlier today, and you kind of touched on this a minute ago, when it comes to James Cook, like, what's the end game, right? What's it, if let's say he holds in. Okay, let's say he holds in. Like, what is it for? What's the end game? Because do you agree with me when I say that's not going to get Brandon Bean to suddenly bend over backwards and give him $15 million? That's not the way Brandon Bean operates, Matt.
He can't. Like, he can't go to that number. Like, we've all looked at all of this. There's extensions on the horizon. There's going to be other moves, like, coming up maybe next offseason that he wants to consider. And he's got a guy. Like, this comes back. I agree with both statements that you just made. Brandon Bean won't be, like, forced into anything. What is the ultimate, trying to figure out the ultimate end game of a hold in is perplexing. Here's the other piece that I don't think we talk nearly enough about. Do I think Ray Davis is, like, the next coming of, you know, an elite level running back? Probably not, but I don't think anybody truly understands what the team thinks of him, like, how good he can be given a more featured role. If the Bills give a lot of those red zone carries to Ray Davis last year or play him even 10% more of the snaps, and James Cook doesn't have that kind of breakout statistical season that he did, are we having a completely different conversation around this entire thing this offseason? The Bills believe in Ray Davis. They also believe in Ty Johnson. And there's also another thing that's really interesting. We're a year removed, and this three-headed monster in their backfield has been so good. We've kind of forgotten about Frank Gore Jr. There was people last training camp, if you remember, that were pounding the table for him to make the 53. So they have some talent in that room. I think that if James Cook isn't a part of this picture long-term, they can draft another running back. They could sign a running back. Ray Davis, get a look at that this year in probably a larger role. And then if he has to take the reins as the starter in 2026, I think you're comfortable with that if you're the Bills.
Matt Parrino here on the Western Hotline. Bills begin training camp tomorrow. Okay, let's talk about the other big storyline, which I think it's James Cook number one, and then, of course, what happens at cornerback two? It just seems like it's the only true competition for a starting job on either side of the ball. How do you think this starts, at least at training camp?
I think it starts with Tre'Davious White and Christian Benford. And I think that he has a very solid understanding of the coaching staff, the system, and what's needed and necessary. And almost in a way, I think the Bills would want to position it just like this, like, hey, rookie, Maxwell Harrison, take notes, right? Like, watch this guy for the first week, and you're going to get your opportunities. But this is how it's supposed to be done. Because I think from a practice, preparation, getting your body right perspective, especially after the two injuries, there's no better teacher than Tre'Davious White could be, and then also Christian Benford, right, like on the other side. So that's the first piece of it. I think there'll be some watching, some teaching, some taking it slow. But I really do think, and maybe this is more of what I think should happen than predicting what will happen, because I think it's going to be a true competition. They're going to go with what the best option on day one. The Bills have had to have had conversations pre and post draft about, all right, what's the deep dive on Kai or Elam? Why didn't it work? What could we have done differently? And then it's about implementing now with another chance at a first round cornerback that is a different style of player than Elam. Fast, but a more zone heavy corner in college as opposed to the press man heavy corner that Kyrie Elam was. Let's figure out a way to put him in a position to be successful and to get him on the field somehow in year one in a prominent role. And the one thing I will say is, like, you know what you have in Dane Jackson. If Tre'Davious White wins the job, he struggled to stay healthy over the last couple of years. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be any long-term starting type situation. And maybe you get to a point where maybe he doesn't start the season, Harrison, but maybe he's in a rotation and you get to a point where he wins the job based on how he plays and performs, which I don't think Elam ever really did enough in any of the 3 years. While he played well at times, and I've said that, I'm on the record saying that, I don't think he ever had a stretch that forced the coaches to keep him on the field. And I think that they may look for that from Harrison if he's in a rotation or even if he's got to earn it in practice if he's not playing.
The only changes on the offensive side of the ball are the two wide receivers. Out are Mac Hollins and Amari Cooper. In are Joshua Palmer and Elijah Moore. I mean, Joshua Palmer's on this team. They gave him a nice contract. They targeted him early in free agency. Not necessarily Elijah Moore. It came after the draft. They gave him some money, some guarantees. Not a huge contract. How do you handicap, you know, where that wide receiver group looks, especially thinking the top five, Shakir, Coleman, Palmer, who am I missing there? And Curtis Samuel, you can even throw him in the mix, and he's got some money there. It would cost him quite a bit of money to move on. But how do you see that group right there beyond the top three at least?
I mean, I like the group. I think the addition of Moore to that group now makes it really interesting, and it's going to be hard for guys like Laviska Shenault and K.J. Hamler, Tyrell Shavers to make a run at a roster spot. Although I think all three of those guys will be competitive, and they'll place them in competitions. Moore to me is like a bit of an X factor. I think before his signing, you could see a lot of what the Bills did with this room and by what they didn't do. You know, bringing in Josh Palmer and what they're hoping is a supercharged version of what they wanted Amari Cooper to be last year. I know Palmer's never been the level of player that Cooper was in his prime, but that wasn't the Cooper they had last year, right? Even pre-injury, I don't know, he might have taken a step back. He never got back to 100% health. But in the big moments, the good moments for him on this team, not only did he put up a couple of big games, but his arrival coincided with the kind of ascension of Keon Coleman before his injury. And so those two things, Palmer's arrival, the separation, the route running, and what that can mean for Keon Coleman on the other side is big. You have one of the best, if not the best, slot receiver in the league in Khalil Shakir. Samuel is the just got to stay healthy. When he was healthy, he made plays in this offense. It wasn't always, you know, in a bunch of big targeted or big reception games, but he found a way to make some big plays, especially down the stretch last season. I thought he had a couple of nice moments. Moore to me is like, where does he fit in? Are you going to ask him to play all of the different positions and maybe get a little bit more creative with what you do with your personnel? Get Shakir on the outside a little bit more. Get Keon Coleman into more of that big slot role that a lot of, you know, film experts have said, even going back to the draft, that that's where he projects better and more of like a Chris Godwin type role. Joe Brady seems a little bit more open to that this offseason, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit more creativity with the personnel packages, but also with where they line up on the field and using them in different kind of alignments.
And then the last position that is really interesting that I think has become a bit polarizing is return spot. You know, I've been on record in saying, and I think, you know, I just think Brandon Codrington is the guy right there. Now, does it mean that he's absolutely guaranteed to be on the team? No, but if he's not, who's the returner? I mean, I could see a scenario where maybe an Elijah Moore could do it, but Sean McDermott really, he has proven you got to trust a guy back there. And they're not just going to keep a guy just because he does more than what Brandon Codrington does at corner, if that makes sense. You know, I don't think that's something the Bills will do. They want to make sure they have a guy there they can really trust. And up until the playoffs last year when he got hurt and he didn't have all the reps in practice and he couldn't be on the field, they didn't have an issue with Brandon Codrington. But how do you see this playing out?
That's a great question. I think in the end, my pre-training camp prediction is that he won't make the roster and they'll figure out a way to use that extra spot for somebody that's going to contribute elsewhere, because they can do a multitude of things. I mean, they can put Shakir back there. And for as good as Codrington was last year, and I thought he was good, I thought he was a field position weapon for the Bills at times. You know, I think Shakir is good too. Now, the question you ask yourself in that situation is, do you want to put Shakir back there and chance him getting, you know, hit extra times?
I just can't see it after the contract they gave him and what role he's going to play. You know what I mean?
Right. And but also, like, they're, if you've done these probably 53-man roster projections, like, when you get down to the end of this thing, there are some really tough decisions on linebackers. Do you keep five or six? Do you want to move off of Baylen Specter finally? Obviously, tight end is going to be three. The offensive line, do you want to keep 9 or 10 offensive linemen? We can make an argument that the offensive line group, like throughout all three positions, is the deepest the Bills have ever had.
100%.
And they have some really tough decisions at the bottom of that of those roster battles. So it's a great question. I think Codrington is somebody that they obviously valued enough to give up draft capital to go get last year, and he looked the part for them a season ago. I think he's gonna be tested. I think they're going to give a lot of different looks to some guys throughout this spring or the summer, and then see where you're at the very end, where you're at injury-wise. That's another piece of this that we can't project, and then make the decision based on that.
Yeah, it should be fun. It should be interesting. What are you looking forward to most, being out at camp, and how often are you going to be staying out there versus coming home?
I'm going to not be out there as much as most years, only because I got to come back for some baseball stuff, and we got a little trip coming up in the middle of camp. Birthday trip for my son,
nice.
Which is actually locked down. We haven't revealed that to him.
Oh, yet, okay. So we'll keep it. Nobody's listening. We'll keep it
Thank
quiet.
You. I appreciate it. But no, I'm excited. I need to get my milkshake from the dairy. We got to get over to the pub a couple times. It's awesome. I just like connecting with Bills fans. We have a live event, as I know you do.
Yep.
There, which I think is a great way. I went to yours last year, hoping to get to it this year. It's just a great time for the whole Bills community, media, fans, everything, to just kind of come together and hang out. It's a 2-week party in Pittsburgh.
So a couple months ago, I told our buddy Sal Marana about, you know, taking Max to the Yankees game and how he didn't, and like, oh, like it was a surprise. Like, I didn't tell him it's a surprise. So he comes on the air, speaking of what you just did, he comes on the air and he's like, oh yeah, and I know you're taking Max to the game. I'm like, no, he doesn't know. He doesn't know. And it went over the radio, right? And I'm like, now somebody at school's gonna be like, oh, I heard you're going to a Yankees game. Thankfully, like, no one said anything. He wasn't listening at the time, but, you know, he was at school on that day, but that didn't happen. So whenever everything happens, it's going to be great. I love it for you. I also love the fact I saw that your team won, what, the Grand Island tournament when I was away? Is that what it was?
Yeah, we won one of the brackets. That was really cool.
That's awesome. One of the brackets.
That was a nice moment for him. Yeah, that was really fun.
Awesome.
It's been a fun summer, man. I'm ready for football season now.
Yeah, me too. Tell everybody where they can find you and Ryan and everything else you guys are doing.
Yeah, the best place to find us is over on X. Probably that's where everything funnels, at Matt Parrino. The Shout Podcast is on all platforms, video, audio. We got that text insider line. I put a tweet out about that today. We're doing a special insider-only Q&A tonight. Get everybody jacked up for training camp. So 2-week free trial, go get that. Appreciate you having me on, buddy.
Yeah, you got it. And make sure you're listening to the next segment, because Pat Hammer is going to tell you how to dress for the next week, okay?
Beautiful. Appreciate it.
You got it. All right, Matt Parrino right there. Thanks a lot. Matt Parrino on the Wester Hotline.
This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, second hour here on a Monday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and pleased to welcome aboard now SI.com NFL writer Matt Verderam, who's joined us before and happy to have him back again. And he's also the host of the Matt Verderam Show. So, Matt, we're about ready to get the ball rolling here on the 2025 campaign. And I know you've been busy. You were doing some quarterback tiers. And you had a little twist on it. where they will all rank at the end of the season, which I thought was kind of an interesting way to look into your crystal ball. And we'll get to Josh in a second, but the one that really kind of raised my eyebrows was J.J. McCarthy, who I know is surrounded by a ton of veteran talent on the offensive side of the ball there and has the quarterback whisperer as his OC and head coach. But, man, you were bullish on J.J. McCarthy. I think you had him in your top 10.
I did. I think I had him 9th. And my reasoning is kind of, you know, what you said, Jay. I mean, they just have so much around them that I feel like he doesn't have to overextend and be this, you know, Superman of a quarterback. He's just got to be a point guard. You've got Jefferson. You've got Addison. You've got Hockenson. They can run the ball with Aaron Jones and Jordan Mason. The offensive line, they added Will Fries and Ryan Kelly on the interior from Indianapolis. Darrisaw coming back. We'll see if he's healthy off the 2 torn knee ligaments. And then you add in O'Connell. I mean, we saw Sam Darnold go from a guy who, let's be honest, was a bust throughout his entire career, and then goes to Minnesota and is a borderline MVP candidate through much of that season and gets himself an $100 million contract. So it is a projection. It is a little bit of a leap of faith. But we saw, you know, look, every year it feels like, or every maybe other year, we see a rookie or a first-time starter take the league by storm. I think McCarthy might be that guy this year.
And how much of, seriously, I mean, I see the same thing you do. Their head coach, the fact that the organization showed faith in him and they had Sam Darnold should tell you a lot about what they think of him, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I do a training camp tour for SI every summer, and I go to see Minnesota every year, a few hours from where I live. You watched McCarthy in camp last season, and it was not hard to see why they liked him. He made every single throw, whether it was team drills, 7-on-7s, individual stuff, and then played well in the preseason. And, of course, then got hurt in the preseason, and that was it. He tore his meniscus. But if the Vikings and O'Connell believe in the quarterback, then I'm going to believe in that quarterback, right, too. Because O'Connell, to me, is on that same level as like a Sean McVay in terms of, hey, look, I know what I see offensively, and specifically that position where he played, of course, briefly in the NFL. So I think the Vikings and McCarthy, I think the potential's there to be fantastic. We'll just see how long it takes him to kind of get going.
Yeah. On that list, you had Josh finishing 2nd to only Mahomes. You had him in the elite category. Not surprised. So just help me understand, because you said where you think they'll rank at season's end. So by putting Mahomes first, are you expecting him to win MVP? Like, help me out with your projection.
I think that Mahomes will have a very good statistical year. Now, granted, this was written also before Rashee Rice finished up with his case down in Dallas, and so now he might be suspended for, you know, whatever it is, 4, 6, 8 games. But I think, you know, last year they were so beat up offensively. They had 4 different left tackles. They didn't have Rashee Rice for most of the year. Worthy was a rookie, and he didn't really take off till the second half of the season. Brown was out almost the whole year. He played 2 regular season games. So I think they should be much better offensively around him. And so that's why I think Mahomes is going to have a big statistical year. Is he the MVP? Look, I think that's going to be pretty much for years to come a race between he, Lamar, Josh, Burrow. Like, it feels like those 4 guys, and I think Jaden Daniels is going to work his way in there. They're the best players in football right now, at least at that position. It's so hard to be the best guy year after year. I don't have an MVP vote at this point. If I did, I would have voted for Allen last year. I thought he was the MVP of the league. I thought he was the best player. I think he will be right in that mix again. But I do think Mahomes just is getting a lot of guys back from a team that, even though they won 15 games, really offensively last year was not dynamic. It was very much don't make mistakes and let the defense win the game.
Yeah. Yeah, and you spent all the quarterback rankings, and I get it. It's Pat, it's Josh, it's Lamar, Joe Burrow, and maybe Jaden Daniels. Yep. Here he's stepping into it. But what is it of those 5 guys outside of that? And we know guys like, you know, Matthew Stafford has been around, and these veterans. What about somebody that we don't know about or have just heard about that you think could maybe climb into that? Who's close? We talked about J.J. McCarthy. That might be a big ask for him in his first year as a starter. Give us one of these guys that maybe who has been around for just a minute who might finally fulfill his potential.
Well, I mean, I give you one in each conference. The guy that I put outside of the top 10 that I got a lot of flack for was Herbert. I think I got him 12th. And my feeling on Herbert was, listen, I get it. Like, the stats have been there, but the moments when it's been its hottest and you've got to have it, they have never done it. And that's also on him. It's not just on him, but it's also on him. You know, I would look at him. I'd look at a guy like C.J. Stroud. Now, I don't think it's really as much as on Stroud as much as they just can't block anybody. And the reason I don't have him in the top 10 is because I still don't think they can block anybody. And they have one meaningful weapon that's proven in Collins. But those are a couple of guys to look at. And then on the NFC side of the thing, he's been around a little bit, but Mayfield. The Buccaneers, offensively, are about as talented as anybody. I mean, when you look at that group, Bucky Irving in the backfield, he was great as a rookie last year. They draft Fabuka out of Ohio State to go with Evans and Godwin and Jalen McMillan, who was very good as a rookie in 2024. Like, I think we could be sitting here. I wouldn't be shocked if Mayfield throws for 4,500 yards and 30 touchdowns. I mean, they have an elite amount of talent around him. They've got a good offensive line. Of course, Wirfs is excellent, although he might miss time to start the year. But I think those are a couple guys that I could see, maybe not getting into that Mahomes-Allen class, but, like, they are really pushing to be seen as, hey, they're right behind those guys.
I know you kind of put together good, bad, and ugly from this offseason recently for SI.com. What is ugly now that could stretch? What was ugly in the offseason that you think could stretch into the regular season for a given club?
The Bengals defense. That to me is, of all the teams that you talk about as potential contenders, to me they have the biggest glaring issue, which is just I don't know how they stop anybody. I mean, legitimately, if they play an Allen in the playoffs, a Mahomes, a Lamar, they're going to have to score 40 points. Like, I don't know how they're going to get off the field. Hendrickson's obviously a holdout. Let's assume that gets done. Okay, who is the second best player on that defense? Logan Wilson? He's good. He's fine. But if he's your second best player on defense, you got a problem. And I have no idea who the third guy is. So, you know, and that's a team that they move off of Lou Anarumo, goes to Indianapolis. They bring in Al Golden, who's 56 years old. He's a veteran coach. He's respected, but he's never been an NFL coordinator. He's got to come in there and run that ship. And look, that's going to be a lot of pressure in the sense they're going to score points, or we all expect them to. So if they're not winning games, if they're not competing in what is a very tough division in the AFC North, it's going to be because they did nothing to improve this defense outside of drafting Shamar Stewart early, and that's been a disaster to this point. I think, look, when you look at the AFC, you better be able to get a pass rush. You better be able to stop somebody, and I don't know that Cincinnati can do it based on their failings in the offseason.
So over the past, you know, decade or two decades, we've always heard the story late in the season that some team is going to go from worst to first. And, you know, in the AFC, you've got New England, Cleveland, Tennessee, Vegas. Okay, maybe one of those two. But in the NFC, the Giants, Chicago, New Orleans, and then you've got San Francisco as well. San Francisco always seems to have the talent maybe to go and do it. They were fourth last year in that division. Are they really the only candidate, or do you see somebody else, other team that's going to vastly improve and maybe make a run at it?
I mean, San Francisco is definitely the favorite, Steve, of all those teams. I think you'd have to sit there and say, look, if they're healthy and they get right, they're the team that could win 12 games and do it. I would argue they might be the biggest wild card in the sport, where you could sit there and say, hey, look, maybe they've missed their window. You could also look at them and say, hey, they could be in the NFC title game, and I don't know that anybody would be shocked about it. The Bears are interesting. The problem for the Bears is that division's just loaded. I mean, they could be good and go 9-8. They could be really good and go 9-8. Like, that division is just so stacked. And then the rest of those teams, I don't see it. I'd be shocked if any of them did it. New England, I think, could be a playoff. I actually think New England could fight for a wild card spot. I don't think they're anywhere close to Buffalo. But, you know, could they win 9 games with May and Vrabel? I'm high on Drake Manning. He's going to be really good. Vrabel's a proven coach. They added a lot of pieces. I like their draft. Like, could they be this year's Denver, where you look at them and go, okay, you know, they're a 7th seed, and they probably get walloped in the first round of the playoffs, but you feel like they've made some real strides. I think New England has that as a ceiling, but I don't see them challenging for the division in any way.
We know, Matt, that the Bills' schedule laid out pretty favorably for them as well for their first 5 at home. Arguably, their toughest opponents are spread out throughout the schedule. Ravens early, Chiefs in the middle, Eagles at the end. What's a tricky game there that you think might be more challenging than maybe the average Bills fan might expect?
You know, I mentioned them earlier. I think Tampa's an interesting team this year. I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl or anything like that, but I think Tampa's tough. And that's one of those, listen, you have a road game before it in the division. You've got two road games afterwards, one of in the game right after. It's a Thursday night game in Houston. So that could be a trap game. It's an NFC game. Maybe it's a game that if you're the Bills, not that you're letting your guard down, but you maybe overlook a little bit because you're coming off that divisional game. You're going into a short week on the road. You have the Pittsburgh on the road after that. And then, you know, look, Atlanta on the road, and it's a Monday night game. So that kind of helps to take the sting out of a potential trap game away. But that's the stadium. There's not a ton of atmosphere. And the Bills, look, if they beat Baltimore to start the year, might very well be 5-0 going to that game. I mean, the Bills are going to be massive favorites between the Jets and Pats games. So I would, at Atlanta, the Bucs, those are games that I certainly would think the Bills should win. But maybe every team has a game per year that you just say, how'd they lose that game? Well, those could be a couple of games that maybe they're tricky if the Bills aren't really locked in.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff, Matt. I appreciate it. I love reading your stuff. That you're comprehensive. You're all over the league. What's one of the stories, if there's a league-wide story that's under the radar that maybe fans of one team don't see the wider end? Do you have anything on your plate that says this might be a problem? I know we were talking earlier about the NFLPA. We're talking about the collusion thing. We're talking about the tush push earlier in the show. I mean, the league never has a lack of something that's on the front burner. What's yours?
You know, this might be something way off the beaten path, but I'm interested in. Like, this is going to be and I think Bills fans after the AFC title game will care about it. This is the first year where they're going to have the technology for first downs that they're going to use, where they're going to have, and it's something they've been working on behind the scenes in recent years, but now they have it. It's the same technology that tennis uses to figure out if a ball's in or out off the line. And so it's going to be interesting to see, how that works, how that's implemented. Are there any bugs with it? Are there any issues? Is there a game early in the year that you feel like maybe, the technology was rolled out a little too quick? Or, and if there's an issue in that stadium with that technology that day, they go back to the chain gang, which wouldn't that be interesting, especially if that's in a big game early in the year. So, it's a little thing that, like, why would you really focus in on it? But I'm curious to see how that works early in the year as they're working out the kinks.
Yeah. And just to let our listeners know and viewers know, you're doing 32 teams in 32 days on SI.com. I don't think you've done the Bills yet, right? Do you know when that one's dropping?
It's out. So I did all the NFC ones. Gilberto Manzano, my colleague, did all the AFC ones.
Okay.
They're out. They finished up, I think, at the end of last week. And we did it in order of inverse order of power ranking. So I'm sure the Bills were this past week.
Okay.
We had them in the top, I'm sure, five. But yeah, we have that. And our training camp tours, we're all going on them. I'll be out in the Midwest. I will see the Bills, though, when they have a joint practice with the Bears August 15th, so I'll be writing up my thoughts on them. But yeah, between myself and Albert Breer, Connor Orr, Gilberto Manzano, we will be here, there, and everywhere all summer long.
All right. Awesome,
travel
Matt.
Safe.
Thanks very much. We'll catch up with you.
Thanks, Matt.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
All right, that's Matt Verderam, Sports Illustrated NFL writer.